Hi, this is Sheila Ferguson, and you're listening to Suzanne Hunter's World of Arts and Entertainment.
This is Jeremy Clyde, and you're listening to Suzanne Hunter's World of Arts and Entertainment.
I'm Nigel Havers, and you're listening to Suzanne Hunter's World of Arts and Entertainment.
Hi, this is Dennis LaCourier, reminding you that you're listening to Suzanne Hunter on Brooklyn's Radio. Like you needed me to tell you that. Brooklyn's Radio.
Hello, everyone. This is Des O'Connor here. Don't panic just yet. I'm not going to sing just yet. I haven't got my big band with me yet. But all is well, and here I am talking to the lovely Suzanne Hunter on her World of Entertainment. So stick around.
Now it's a real pleasure to welcome onto the show one of Britain's most popular and best-loved entertainers, Des O'Connor. Thank you for joining me.
It's no problem at all. It's lovely to talk to you, Suzanne.
Now, audiences will be thrilled to hear that you're going to be sharing stories and anecdotes in a new upcoming show entitled The Ultimate Des O'Connor. And we're going to talk about that in just a moment. But I think the show could also be called The Multi-Talented Des O'Connor, as you've done everything. You know, you've been a comedian, chat show host, game show host, singer, actor, and more recently, writer. But did you always aspire to be a performer as a child?
No, you just aspire to getting bigger and getting taller, getting more cakes and more ice cream. But my mum always used to think that I was going to be either a professional golfer or footballer. You know, we were East End kids. You know, I just was growing up. I didn't know at that stage. I started out then in show business in the Air Force. I was kind of ordered into show business. It was a talent contest going to happen, and I was standing on a desk in the Naffy, which was the old kind of canteen, and there was this round of applause behind me, and I was doing an impression of the commanding officer, and I turned around, it was him. He said, "Oh, very funny, O'Connor, yeah, it's very funny. I think the entire camp should see that." And he literally ordered me into show business. But that wasn't until I was about 21 or 22 or something like that.
Oh, fantastic. Because I believe you started off as a redcoat before moving into the world of variety. Was this a good learning ground for your time as a comedian and a chat show host?
I don't think there's a better one than that, because you're there with something like that. There'll be 8,000 people per weekend in Farley Holiday Camp, and you have to get up for 4 or 5 hours in an afternoon, literally 4 or 5 hours in a tent, and watch people play bingo for about 2 hours, and and then some more would come in. We'd have two lots of that, and it was just wonderful. You had to you would use your gags, other people's gags. You would just learn to talk to people. And that's the most important thing of all: relaxing, talking, and having a chat with people. Well, we don't know each other, but I feel relaxed with you, Suzanne.
Well, that's lovely. I feel relaxed with you, Des, because I mean, you do have that very easy charm when you're on TV, and obviously you've dealt with the great British public in things like Take Your Pick. I mean, that must have been a good forerunner for that, you know, being in the holiday camps, because people come up and, like you said, the bingo. Did that help
Take
you at
Your
all?
Pick was classic, because I remember saying to the producer, "Look, we're going to do this, but we're going to not tell anyone they're going to be in this show. Let them just turn up in their coaches, and then we'll pick out people in the warm-up." And there was a panic going on. And she said, "We can't do that. What? I said, "No, we'll just do it. If it's a disaster, then we'll change it after that." But I knew it would work, because you had a whole coachload of people all cheering one of their mates on who'd been in the coach them and didn't even know they were going to be in the show. And I think that only comes from learning from things like Butlins, where you've got hundreds, literally thousands of people throughout a week. You're ad-libbing with them. And you learn just to relax and just be yourself.
Right, is that spontaneity as well? Because that's going to pick up on the camera of people's elation and surprise of being on television, you know?
Well, that's absolutely right. And that spontaneity happens in the live shows, the ones that I'm doing right now. Which, by the way, I've got two tours on, if you want to talk about that sometime.
Oh, yeah. We're going to be talking about that one. Building up, as they say.
Well, you know, I think you read something like, I said, The Ultimate Des O'Connor.
Yes.
But those were all booked much earlier than the recent tour, which I've done with Jimmy Tarbuck. There's a lot of spontaneity and ad-lib going on in the show. In fact, I've got two tours at the moment. I was asked to do one show with Jimmy Tarbuck at the London Palladium, which I played once or twice before.
Yes, I think so.
Well, 1,309, I think it was. And we went on there, and it was such a success. And it was such a wonderful night, and so many laughs. And, you know, I couldn't believe how successful it was. And people said, "Would you do another 6 or 7? So I ended up doing two tours. One for myself, which was the one-man show, the ultimate Des.
The ultimate.
And one with Jimmy Tarbuck, which... But both evenings, there's lots of spontaneity going, lots of ad lib and lots of fun. And it's never boring. It's more of a happening than a show.
I mean,
I'll say, would anybody want to come up and play piano for me? And I think the audience think, he's got someone set to come on up on the stage. I don't. Sometimes people come on up, they're so bad, it's wonderful, because I have to sing with them. And it's just marvelous. And when the public realize, hey, that was for real, it didn't happen last night, not going to happen like this tomorrow night. It just happened now. It's for us. I do say that it's more of a happening than a show.
Definitely.
A lot of fun.
Yeah, got a bit of a Les Dawson type of person coming on and playing the piano.
When they come on up and you try and sing with them, you know, sometimes I don't even know what the song is. I say, what is that? it just becomes hilarious.
Yeah.
It's not something you can sit down and write. It's either funny or it isn't.
Exactly.
And usually it's funny.
Oh, brilliant. It's just busking, isn't it? Just going along with it. But, I mean, you're in good company there, aren't you? Of your former guest, Jimmy Tarbuck. You did this back in October, didn't you? And you're well used to, like you said, the Palladium stage, 1,200 performances that you've done there. It's just incredible. Talk about that in a moment. But this was for a charity named the Royal Variety Charity. Tell us a little bit about that charity.
Well, it's the first time they've the Palace have given permission for that actual title, the Royal Charity, to be used, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But so we were thrilled, and we were the first. In fact, I don't think there's anyone else that's gone on since, but we were the first to do anything for the actual charity, and it was such a success. I couldn't say no, and it was great being at the theatre and great being with Jimmy, who's fun to be with, you know, he's very cheeky, and that's something we don't do, by the way. But we might be cheeky, but we're never offensive, and not that Jimmy ever is either. Months, if you like, by Southend, Bristol, Bournemouth, Leeds, Southampton, all big theatres. I prefer, actually, if I'm really honest, the smaller venues. And the venues where I can go home and get into my own bed that night.
Don't blame you. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, Epsom Playhouse, which you'll be coming to on the 11th of September, that's actually quite a nice space. But you have played massive venues, haven't you? You've done Vegas. You know, you've been the London Palladium. I mean, it doesn't get much bigger than that, does it? But it must be such a thrill doing those sort of venues.
It is marvellous. In Canada, in Toronto, I played the O'Keefe Centre, which had 4,000 people in it. I played the Ed Murphy's Warehouse, which is 2,000. I played the local, the Royal Hotel there, which had, I think, 250 people in the room. But the biggest evening there in Toronto was at the National Expo, and there was 25,000 people.
Wow.
25. So, you know, you do learn how to tailor your material and this stuff. Because we've got a nice mix of laughter and humour and comedy, and I've got a good band with me when I require them for the second half of the show. It's more of a structure to it, the second half of the show.
Yeah.
The first half is very loose and a lot of fun. It really is a lot of fun, Suzanne. There's a lot of giggles going on. You can sense that.
Yes, it's proper variety then, isn't it, in that sense? You know, going back to that, to variety, where it isn't just one thing, just going with the flow. And using the audience as well, who are often very comical, as you know.
That's right. What I never want to do is make fun of an audience or embarrass an audience.
No.
That's the worst thing. They paid you, got in for nothing. You have to remember that. And just entertain them. Send them home with a smile on their faces. That's the important thing. And get them to suddenly realize they're taking part in something without even knowing they're doing it. I used to hate it when I would see, say, the girl singer would come along and kiss a bald man on his head, and you go, oh, don't do that. You must be so embarrassed, man.
Yes, exactly.
I would never do that. But when I say, would anybody like to come up and play piano, and they suddenly realize, this is for real. This guy, he lives around the corner from us. Cause I usually ask, do you live locally, et cetera, whatever. If he wants to, he can answer me. And and I think they know they're part of something that's happening, especially for that show.
Exactly.
Helped a lot on the day.
Exactly. Every venue is different and every audience will react differently. But, I mean, you're used to knowing how to read an audience. And you were saying about large venues and obviously notorious venues. They don't come more notorious than the Glasgow Empire. But, of course, yourself and Jimmy Tarbuck and wonderful comedians will know all about that. But you're lucky to avoid, you know, getting a glass in the head there, aren't you? But I find the Epsom audience will be far more...
I fainted with fear there. I couldn't stand 3,000 people and I could actually hear the silence. It was getting louder, the silence was. And I threw a faint, and I remember I was dragged through the curtains. And Eric Morecambe, for years, said... you're the only comic that ever sold advertising space on the soles of your shoes. I basically talk about anything the public want to talk about, and I literally mean anything within reason.
Yes,
that you want to discuss, that's okay by me.
Yeah.
You know, and I think, and when you know that it is ad lib and it is loose and it is fun and it's genuine, I think you enjoy it more.
Well, that's right. I mean, talking about Morecambe and Wise and the curtain, I mean, the curtain famously came down every time you were about to open your mouth to give song. Of course, you have enjoyed huge success with your records. I'm going to talk about that in a moment. But, you know, you were the brunt of the long-running gags. How did you find that? Did you find that all very amusing, all the teasing? And what was it like working with them?
Well, let me put it this way. The 16 million records sold now, they're not all in my garage. But a lot of, and it seemed to me that every time there was an insult, there was more records sold. And we were great mates. And I think most of the public knew that it was for fun. My mum didn't. My mum used to say, "What's that tall fellow with the glasses saying all those dreadful things about you?" And then also my kids used to be at school and they'd get sweets thrown at them, stale cakes and buns. "Your dad's rubbish," and all of that. But I explained to them that it was all in fun. It was just a giggle and just a laugh. And I think at the end of the day, the public have kind of reacted to that and realised that, you know, I wasn't taking it too seriously.
Exactly. And you always had the sort of quality, I feel, of being able to sort of laugh at yourself. And as they say, all publicity is good publicity. So doesn't that have it done?
Don't you think you hit a very good point there? Don't you think that it's right that you don't take yourself too seriously? Too many people do. We're not, especially when you're doing comedy, when you're dealing with jokes. Usually the person that's joked most about in an office or a factory or on the floor is someone that they're quite popular in their own way. People like them.
Exactly.
So, you know, you mustn't take it too seriously.
They've got something about them to make you want to. If you were just nothing, you wouldn't really bother, would you?
Well, occasionally you get the odd one. Well, you can leave them alone and move on to someone else that's popular.
Yes. I mean, the thing is, it's like when you said, you know, obviously it's important to laugh at yourself, and you always look like you've really been thoroughly entertained by all your guests that you had join you on the sofa on, like, Des O'Connor Tonight and all the other wonderful shows that you did. And somebody who made you double up with laughter, I remember seeing, was Spike Milligan. Was there any rehearsal, or was it as mad cap as it came across?
I don't think you can rehearse a conversation. You can rehearse an interview. We don't do interviews. We did conversations.
Mm.
We would sit down. I don't know what they were going to say. I would get the researcher guy to say, "Just run through if there's any funny stories you think might be working well on the show." So they would do that, but I didn't want to know. And it was ad lib. And yes, I used to laugh quite a lot. I got told often I was laughing at things that were cut out. You'd see them on screen, see me laughing my head off. It was a previous joke that never made it on the screen for whatever reason. But I was very lucky. I was being paid to do something I enjoyed so much.
Yeah, it's absolutely fantastic. And I mean, we remember those book of poems that Spike Milligan created. But I believe a couple of years back, you've actually created your first collection of comic verse called Laughter Lines. Have you always liked verse? And what inspired you to put pen to paper?
I think a lot of it was, I remember hearing a radio of Rob Wilton, the old comic, doing one night at Land's End, one night at my wit's end, one night when I'd had one or two, the captain came out on the bridge and said, "Lads, we are doomed, the old tub's going down. To the boats, every man, except you." I said, "Me?" He said, "Yes, there's no room, you must drown." I said, "Drown?" He said, "Drown, don't stand arguing there. I've just told you straight, there's no room for you, mate, in the boats or in fact anywhere. I know it's upsetting, but what's the use fretting? We might have lost all of the crew, but now, as I say, we can all get away and only lose one, and that's you." So I remember thinking at the time, "God, I'd like to do that." And I was telling Adam about it, who, as I say, has got this feel for comedy. And he said, and he came back from school one day and he said, "Do you think this is funny, Dad? I wish I were a glowworm. I never could be glum, because how can I be miserable when the sun shines out my bum?" And this is from a kid. We know it wasn't Keats or anything special, but he seemed to know that I wanted to make people laugh. And so I wrote this book called Laughter Lines. And I just took little... I'm going to lecture now. I better be careful. Too many of us get on a soapbox. Too many of us worry about things. Don't worry about... Worry about things when they happen, not if they happen. And I anything that niggled me at all, instead of getting cross or angry with life, I would try and write... One of them, I remember, was... I used to look in the mirror each morning. I was happy with what I saw. Then I started wearing contact lenses, and I don't look so good anymore. And they're all just little bits of truth, you know.
Yes.
And little things to niggle us, you know. Well, you can't put that in that bin. You have to put it in that bin. You can't, you know, oh, you got to recycle. Oh. Mm. They drive you crazy. So I wrote a thing about that. I've written things about, I was asked at that time, I remember, to do, well, who do you think you are?
Oh, yes.
And I said, well, how long will it take? And they told me, and I said, oh, let me try if I can do this. So I went and sat down, and I wrote a funny little poem. And I'm trying to remember the few lines was, I did some DIY genealogy, but I think I got some of it wrong. Because according to me, I'm 103 and my grandma's alive in Hong Kong. Nonsense, absolutely. It is absolutely. But, you know, it helps with the little things. It could niggle you if you let them.
Exactly. It definitely, a bit of levity is needed, isn't it? You know, you need to lighten the moment. But the verse actually does pack a punch because it does, it says what it needs to, isn't it, in that frame of time.
I remember coming back from the airport and thinking, "Why? I can't believe, you know, I'm not being a big deal because I'm not a big deal person, but, what was the thing? They took away my nose clippers, saw them as a threat, I suppose, like I might burst into the captain's cabin and pull all the hairs out of his nose. Also, absolute rubbish, nonsense, but they're funny, and I've written so many of those. It's amazing how people have enjoyed them over the years.
That's what you need, isn't it? Just a little bit of bit of lightheartedness, really, at the end of the day.
Yep.
But you're going to have some of those in the show. You're going to put some...
Oh, a lot of that. Anything will come in. What do you want to talk about now? It wouldn't matter what anybody said. When I ask for people to come on, you know, they can come on. I ask anybody got any personal problems. You would be amazed, Susanna, where that could take you. You would be absolutely amazed. You don't need a script. You're just talking with people and just listening to their lines, it leads you down. If you've got a sense of fun, it's perfect for that.
Yeah, and it's kind of like you become Father Confessor, don't you, as well, on stage as well? People telling you all their issues.
If anybody's got any problems, I mean, there was one woman complaining that her husband said, no, my man won't do what he should do. And I said, well, your man won't? And I thought, I'd better be careful here.
Yes.
What do you mean your man won't do? You mean he won't mend the garden gate? No, you know what I mean. So I said, I thought, I better stop this. I said, look, give me your husband's number and I'll talk to him. She said, it's not my husband, it's my man.
Oh. Getting deeper and deeper into this, Des.
reverse. There are just funny moments that happen, and that's why I call it a happening rather than a show.
Oh,
and that's
definitely
what I hope will happen in Epsom.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, the Great British Public are wonderful, aren't they? But also, of course, you know how to deal with big stars as well, because it must feel strange for you being interviewed here on the radio, because you have been in the hot seat so many times, you know, talking to everyone from Sinatra to Streisand, Shirley Bassey, just so many big names. You look so unflappable on set, but can you cite any challenges or any unexpected joys?
Have you tried taking, for instance, Freddie Starr on? I mean, it's like taking a mad Rottweiler for a walk in the park. try working with Roy, try the emu. There you are. I can talk about that. There's so many. I've sat down. I've been fortunate to sit down with royalty, with everyone, politicians, MPs, prime ministers. I've been very fortunate over the years. But you mustn't panic about it, because remember, you're going to be back next week. They only come now and again. But you do it week after week after week. So you learn not to panic, and it would be very easy to become just lost in it all.
Yes.
You know, you just have to have fun. The essence of all of that is fun. Send them home, the audience, with a smile on their faces.
With a laugh.
Say, I enjoyed that. I mean, I love it when I've had a husband before now come up to me at the stage door and say, you know what, I didn't want to come, but I was dragged along tonight. And you know what? You're all right.
Please indeed.
You're all right is a big tick.
Oh, the thing is, you have been used to, you know, working with so many people, and you're still doing the singing, of course, because, you know, 36 albums, over 36 albums, and number one, I Pretend, of course, 10 million sold there. But you're also working with, talking of Barbra Streisand just there, you're working with Alan Hawkshaw on an album called Inspired. What inspired you to write that?
Well, we'd done an album called A Tribute to the Crooners, which had done very well with all the classic songs on it, you know, the real classic songs. I'm reaching for it. nice and easy, unforgettable one for my baby, the very thought of you, I want to be around, I've got you under my skin, Brazil. There was a whole list, and I said to him, that did so well, that album, which he did do it, you know, it sold very nicely. I said, let's see if we can write some of these American, great American songbook songs. He said, are you joking? He said, I wrote the theme to Countdown, which he did. You know that one, the way, doo-doom, 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 boy, 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 you know, that. And I'd written, helped to write Dick a Dum Dum. He said, who's going to buy ours? So we sat down and we wrote some songs we're really both very proud of. That's why we called it Inspired, that classic songs. And I take that along to the theatres just in case anybody's daft enough to want to buy it. But he is a very big talent, Alan Horshaw, very clever man.
That's fabulous. I mean, you know, so are you as well, because it's interesting that Alan has also worked with, as well as Barbra Streisand, Elvis. Because
yeah, he did.
Yeah, you yourself has toured with the great Buddy Holly when he came over in 1958. So,
God, how old am I, Susan?
I didn't like to say.
But it is true. Yeah, I did work with Buddy Holly. He was a lovely guy. He talked like that. He's, how are you doing, Des?
Mm-hmm.
And I remember once, he was about 6'2", he was a big guy, and I had to go and pull him out of bed because he wouldn't get on the coach. And I pulled his legs and he said, don't do that, Des, I'm tall enough. He's a lovely man, a brilliant talent.
Aww.
Some great. And of course, when I've got the band on stage, I'll do some of the songs if someone asks. From that time of life when he was singing those songs, you know, it was just, I'm very fortunate. I've got top musicians, Ray Monk with me, and we do the first part of the show is very loose, very, like we're talking about now, anything that comes into mind.
Mm-hmm.
And the second part of the show is more structured and more of an act, if you like, that's
yeah.
happening.
Yeah.
More of an act. And there's a bit of something there for everybody. And we try and do something that sends everybody home happy.
Yeah, it's fabulous, isn't it? I mean, the thing is, you could also, of course, go into a musical number because you've combined your singing and your acting when you've been playing The Wizard in Andrew Lloyd Webber's The Wizard, and also you were in Bill Kenwright's Dreamcoats and Petticoats, so very versatile. What was it that drew you to those particular projects?
Purely because I'd not done those before, although many, many years, and I'd played most of the major venues in the world, in cabaret and theatre, but to suddenly get... those shows are solo performances, like the London Palladium, and solo performances, but to suddenly be invited to go into a show, I had the Palladium, strange enough, Wizard of Oz.
Yes, and just nice to go back there.
Yeah, fantastic.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
In an Andrew Lloyd Webber production, it was brilliant.
Mm.
And the thing is that, you know, you've got to do lines that are already written, and you must remember sometimes you've got four or five people on the stage with you, and you've got to do lines. You can't ad-lib all that. I mean, I did ad-lib one afternoon there. I remember Andrew Lloyd Webber apparently was in the theatre, and there was a line in the show where the professor or the wizard is found to be a bit of a phony,
mm-hmm.
and I had to walk forward. And as I walked forward, I said, I'm sorry, there is no other wizard except me. And as I said that, I tripped and I fell over. And I said, and what kind of a wizard am I? I can't even walk properly. Brought the house down, you can imagine. But you can only do that now and again, and you can't. People said, well, you should keep that in every night, but it wouldn't work every night. The public are not fools. They're not idiots. They know what they're watching.
Yeah, it's good for you that you're so experienced, you're not seduced into thinking, oh, that works, I'll put that trick in, because it's a moment, isn't it?
Yeah,
which you can't recreate, you know?
No, that's exactly right. I think of the moment humour, and in fact I use that phrase now and again in the show,
mm-hmm.
of the moment humour, I give examples of it. It just works, and I don't do jokes per se, you know. Have you heard the one about the man walked into the bar? I can't be doing that. I just talk about what happened in my life, things that we all have happened in our lives, and just get people smiling and saying, yeah, that's right, that happens, doesn't it? I think that's important. It's part of reality and genuine, honest humour.
Well, I mean, it sounds like it's going to be an absolutely phenomenal show. You know, talking about the Palladium there, you hosted the Royal Variety Performance from 1966 to 1997. I mean, it must be wonderful to have gone back for those musicals, but it is just wonderful being on the stage, isn't it, again, and all these different venues coming up. So,
You're right, Suzanne, but each one is a challenge. It wouldn't matter that I'm not playing to 25,000 people in Canada. It doesn't really matter that I'm not at the Palladium or I'm a lot in Las Vegas. I'm going to be in Epsom, and I used to drive through Epsom. Because believe it or not, I had an amateur jockey's license for a couple of years. I never actually got on because I was at the Palladium and they wouldn't let me. It's a dangerous sport. But I love the thought of walking on Epsom and going to that little theatre there. I call it a little theatre. It's not little, but it's not as big as some of the venues, which is just a bit too big for me. Some of them are so big they need TV screens for you to see the person. Right. Well, you might as well stay at home.
You think we know which ones we're talking about here, don't we? But yeah, you know, it's different. You lose a little bit from that, and it is nice to have that live theatrical experience where everybody's really enjoying it.
And if you get an audience, you know, you say any problems, they're not going to talk to you if there's 10,000 of them.
No.
You know, I'm not criticising anybody that, because sometimes they go on and they're a bit naughty with their language, which is something we don't do. And I'm not being sacrilegious or anything. I just don't think it's required.
I don't think so.
But I'm not criticising them because if they're sending 10,000 people in to see them, then somebody somewhere selling the tickets, so good luck to them.
Yeah.
But it's not for me. I like to have fun with a gang of people. And it always feels like to me that there are people coming into my home. People just say, you always treat the guest like a guest, but that's surely the essence of the word, guest. Someone is a guest in your home. You look after them. And it's the same with the audience. You don't embarrass them, you don't bore them. You get them giggling and you do what they want.
Exactly. It's caring enough to actually put that effort into it rather than just throwing it out and seeing what happens. Can I just mention, when you're talking about the songs, do you have a particular favourite song and will you be sort of adding that into the mix in the show?
No, I love what I'm doing. The first tribute to the Crooners, which we did, there were some great songs on there. You know, like, I Want to Be Around, I've Got You Under My Skin, Brazil, We'll Be Together Again, It Had to Be You as Time Goes By. They're all classic songs. And that song that I'm singing at that moment is my favourite song. Mm-hmm. My favourite guest is the one sitting on the couch with me at that moment. Mm-hmm. You know, it's very difficult to pick out one of anything. And there have been so many, unfortunately, so many different versions of the show, the type of thing we do. But most important of all is entertain them. Entertain the public, entertain the guests.
Yes.
You'll find that most of the guests will tell you things you don't expect because you've got them relaxed. That's very, very important. And you must get the audience relaxed as well. Nobody's going to laugh at a comic if they think, oh, he's petrified up there.
Yeah, exactly. You have to be relaxed, don't you? Michael Caine says that with acting, doesn't he? If you're relaxed, then everyone else is relaxed. So,
don't know that, but if that's the truth, if that's what he said, then I believe him. He's absolutely right. You've got to be able to do it and believe in it and you know, just relax with it, have fun with it.
Yeah.
Most of the time it's fun anyway.
Yeah, we've always come across as if you're having fun, and then we all have fun. And, we've shared lots of great stories and anecdotes today, and you've just touched, it's just, skimming the surface, really, because to get the full story, people have to get to see the ultimate Des O'Connor. And, of course, you're going to be at Epsom Playhouse on the 11th of September, and you're up and down the country as well, Chequers Mead as well, and lots of other venues. So we'll talk about that afterwards.
Coming at 4 o'clock. You've got to be at 4. It was a surprise to me when they said 4 o'clock. It's true that I don't stop coughing till 10. But I was joking.
See you, Aubrey Smith.
but it is important the public do know that.
Absolutely.
And also, it has even more to it. It's not so much, if you're going on in the evening, it's somehow, some way, it's got to be a show. But this is a get-together of people enjoying a person. And hopefully that's what happens at Epsom.
Oh, well, I'm absolutely sure it will. It's been an absolute joy to speak to you today, Des, and to share some of your wonderful memories and such an all-round entertainer and a versatile talent. And thank you so much for being on the show.
And thank you for being in the world of entertainment.
Best place to be, huh?
Thank you.
That was my very special guest, the one and only Des O'Connor.
Suzanne Hunter, bringing you the world of arts and entertainment in Surrey and beyond on Brooklyn's Radio.
Thank you so much to my very special guest, the wonderful Des O'Connor. Now, to see the ultimate Des O'Connor, the legend, live on stage, be sure to find out about all the dates by going to Des's website, which is www.desoconnornow.com. You can find out all the dates there. But locally, don't forget, he's going to be at the Epsom Playhouse on the 11th of September at the earlier time of 4 p.m. To book for that show, go to www.epsomplayhouse.co.uk. Des will also be at the Chequers Mead, East Grinstead, on the 24th of September. Now, Des mentioned, as well as his solo shows, he'll also be playing a handful of dates with Jimmy Tarbuck, entitled Des O'Connor and Jimmy Tarbuck Live on Stage. And there's a remaining date for that on October the 2nd at the Milton Keynes Theatre. Just a wonderful show and one not to miss. Of course, two fabulous shows for Des O'Connor and Des O'Connor with Jimmy Tarbuck. Be sure to check it out. And thanks once again to a wonderful guest on the show. And thanks so much to you for listening to Suzanne's World of Arts and Entertainment.
Brooklyn's Radio. Loving arts and entertainment.